When I hit Building 3, I felt the change in climate as I went through the door. It was more run down than the other apartments. Some fresh graffiti marked an interior wall. More of the doors had double deadbolts on them. The carpet was old and stained. The pane of a window had been broken out and replaced with a piece of wood. The whole place screamed that unpleasant sorts were lurking about, making the building super reluctant to maintain the halls and foyer, maybe forcing him to continue dealing with problems and damage over and over again. I couldn't hear any music. That's unusual in buildings like that one, mostly inhabited by students. Kids love their music, however mind-numbing or ear-rending it might be, and you can almost always hear at least a beat thumping somewhere nearby. Not here, though. I kept my eyes open, tried to grow a new pair for the back of my head, and started knocking on doors.
No,
lied a small, fragile-looking woman who said her name was Maria, a resident of the third floor. She hadn't opened the door more than the security chain allowed.
I didn't hear or see anything.
I tried to make my smile reassuring. Ma'am, the way this usually works is that I ask you a question and then you tell me a lie. If you give me a dishonest answer before I have the chance to ask the question, it offends my sense of propriety. Her head shook in quick, jerky spasms as her eyes widened.
No, I'm not lying. I don't know anything.
Maria tried to shut the door. I got my boot into it first. You're lying, I said gently. You're scared. I get that. I've gotten the same treatment from almost everyone in the building. She looked away from me, as if seeking an escape route.
I'll call the police.
I am the police, I said, which was technically true. They hadn't fired me yet.
Oh, God,
she said. She shook her head more and more, desperation in the gesture.
I don't want to be... I can't be seen talking to you. Go away.
I lifted my eyebrows. Ma'am, please, if you're in trouble... I wasn't sure she'd even heard me. I'd seen women like her often enough to know the look. She was terrified of something, probably a husband or boyfriend, or a string of husbands and boyfriends, and maybe a father before that. She was living scared, and she'd been doing it for a long time. Fear had ground away at her, and the only way she'd been able to survive was by capitulating. Maria was damaged goods. She shook her head, sobbing, and just started pushing at the door. I was about to pull my foot out and go away. You can't force someone to accept your help.
Is there some kind of problem here?
Asked Abu's roughened voice. I turned to face a woolly mammoth of a man. He was well over 6 feet tall and probably weighed 3 of me, though more of it was mass than muscle. He wore a white undershirt that showed off his belly, and a button-down shirt with the name Ray embroidered on one breast. He looked at me and at the apartment door and scowled.
Mary, you've got some kind of problem.
Maria had gone still, like a rabbit that suspects a predator is nearby.
No, Ray, she whispered. It's nothing.
Sure as hell don't sound like nothing, Ray said.
He folded his arms.
I'm trying to get the city out here to fix the lights on the street and the fuse box, and you're making enough noise to fuck up my conversation all the way down the hall.
I'm sorry, Ray,
Maria whispered. Something flickered behind Ray's eyes, an ugly little light.
Jesus, I give you all that extra time to pay off on the rent, and you treat me like this?
Maria sounded as though someone were strangling her.
It was an accident. It won't happen again.
We'll talk, he said.
Maria flinched, as if the words had smeared her with grime. My hand clenched into a fist. Well, damn it. I'd seen Ray's type before, too. Bullies who never managed to outgrow the playground. People who liked having power over others and who controlled them through fear. He was big, and he thought that made him more powerful than everyone else. The worm probably had a record, probably had done some time, probably for something fairly gutless. For guys like Ray, sometimes prison only convinces them what dangerous badasses they are, serving as a confirmation and validation of their status as predators. Ray looked from Maria to me, with that same ugly light in his eyes. You're the super? I asked. He grunted in Martian. Fuck off and die. It's an expressive language, Martian.
"What's it to you?" he asked.
"I'm the curious sort," I said.
"Fuck off and die," Ray said, in English this time. "Get out."
He looked past me to Maria.
"Close that goddamn door."
I've been trying, Maria said.
My foot and my heavy black work boot were both still between the door and its frame. Flat rage hit Ray's eyes, and it was aimed at Maria. That made up my mind for me. Ray was obviously an abuser, and one who took out his frustrations wherever he damned well pleased, instead of upon their source. He was going to be unhappy with me, and when he realized he couldn't take it out on me, Maria would be the recipient of his rage. It more or less obliged me to protect her. And I wasn't going to enjoy doing it even one little bit, either. Honest.
"Get your foot out of the door before I tear it off," Ray growled.
"Suppose I don't," I said.
"Last chance," Ray said, his eyes narrowing to slits.
He was breathing faster now, and I could see sweat beading on his brow.
"Get out of here, now."
"Or what?" I asked mildly. "You gonna hit me, Ray?" Self-control was not one of Ray's strong suits. He spat out the word bitch, spraying spittle with it as he did. He moved toward me, all 300 and change pounds of him, his hands balled into fists the size of cantaloupes. There was something Ray didn't know about me. I know martial arts. I'm not a truly advanced student, but I've practiced every day since I was 17. I started with Aikido, then Wing Chun, then Jiu-Jitsu. I've studied Kali, Savat, Krav Maga, Taekwondo, Judo, Boxing, and Shaolin Kung Fu. It sounds impressive laid out like that, but it really isn't. Once you get two or three arts down, the next dozen or so come pretty quick. Since they're all addressing the same problem, and because human bodies are human bodies, regardless of which continent you're on, they share characteristic motions and timing. Ray swept a fist at me in a looping punch a kiddie league fighter could have avoided, so I took my foot out of Maria's door and ducked it. He kept coming forward in a fleshy avalanche while I went under his arm and took a pair of steps to one side on a diagonal angle. He tried to grab me as I slipped loose, but he wound up losing his balance badly in doing it. I gave him a helpful push with the first two knuckles of my left fist right in the kidney. Ray smashed into the drywall and left dents. I thought about how long it had taken him to build up speed, and I took several steps back. He turned, screaming a vicious oath, and came at me, gathering sluggish momentum like an overloaded tractor trailer. I had to back up another pair of steps to give him enough space to move into a wobbling run. He didn't bother with a punch this time. He simply grabbed at me with his huge arms. I timed it carefully and dropped to the floor at the last instant, sweeping my leg out in an almost gentle kick that did nothing except prevent his right foot from proceeding forward into the floor in proper rhythm with his left. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. Ray fell pretty hard. He staggered up to his hands and knees and swiped a paw at me in another grab. Jesus Christ! Basic self-defense instructors would kill to have a video of this. He was coming at me with every stupid aggressive move he possibly could, as if working his way through a list. There were a lot of things I could have done with the gift he'd made me of his hand, but in real conflict, I don't get fancy. I go with simple, fast, and reliable. I let him grab my wrist, then broke his grip, wrapped him into a wrist lock, and applied pressure. That kind of hold has very little to do with muscle or mass. That one is all about exploiting the machinery of the human body. It wouldn't have mattered if Ray was in shape. He could have looked like Schwarzenegger as Conan, and he would have been just as helpless. Human joints are all built to more or less the same specifications, out of similar materials, no matter how much muscle or lard is on top of them. They're vulnerable, if you know how to use them against your opponent. I did. 300+ pounds of body odor, stupid and mean, slammed down onto the worn, dirty carpeting in the hallway, as if dropped from a crane. While he lay there, stunned, I twisted his wrist straight up and behind him, keeping his arm locked straight with my other hand. From there, I could literally take his arm out of his shoulder socket with about as much effort as it would take to push a grocery cart. And I could make him hurt, a lot if need be, in order to discourage him from trying any more stupid moves. Being Ray, he tried stupid again, screaming and thrashing against the lock. I sighed and kept control, and he and his face relived his crushing impact with the carpet. We repeated that several times until the lesson began to drill its way through to Ray. He wasn't going anywhere. It would hurt if he tried. "So, I've been talking to people in several buildings," I said in a calm, conversational tone. Ray was puffing like an engine. "I was wondering if you could tell me if you saw anything odd or unusual last night." "Probably between 2 and 3 in the morning."
"You're breaking my fucking arm!"
Ray growled, or tried to. It had been watered down with wine. "No, no, no," I said. "If I broke your arm, you'd hear a snapping sound. It sounds a lot like a tree branch breaking, actually, though a little more muffled. What you have to worry about is me dislocating your arm at the shoulder and elbow. That's worse overall, just as painful, and it takes a hell of a lot more effort to recover."
"Jesus!"
Ray said. "Are you telling me that Jesus was visiting between 2 and 3 last night? I'm dubious, Ray."
"I didn't see nothing,"
he said a few panting seconds later.
"All right? Jesus Christ, I didn't see nothing."
"Aha," I said. "You sound like an honest man." I used my bracing arm to reach for my coat pocket, then tossed my badge down onto the floor in front of him. He stared at it for a long second, and then his face went white. "Here's what happens," I said, very quietly. "You're going to resign from your job. You're going to write a very nice letter to your boss, and then you get out of this building. You're gone by noon tomorrow."
"You can't do that," he said.
"I can do whatever I want," I said. "Which of us do you think the judge will believe, Ray?" That isn't how I approached law enforcement. It isn't how any good cop does, either. But the criminals are always willing, even eager, to believe the absolute worst about cops. I think it makes them feel better if they can convince themselves that the police are just like them, only with badges and a paycheck. "You're going, one way or another. You don't play ball? I send a city inspector in here to verify all the code violations on this building. Fire extinguishers are missing. The smoke detectors are years old, and most of the ones that aren't missing entirely are just hanging from their wires. You've got mold and fungus issues all over the place. Lights are out. There's trash piling up outside." I yawned. "On top of that, there are drug deals going down in your parking lot, Ray. I figure you're in on that."
"No," he said. "No, I'm not."
"Sure you are. It fits you, doesn't it? And here you are assaulting an officer." I shook my head sadly. "So when the building fails inspection, maybe even makes it into the paper, you'll be fired anyway. And on top of that, I'll finger you in the drug deals. I'll press charges for assault. How many strikes do you already have on you, big guy? Can you handle 2 more?
"You're bluffing," he said.
"Maybe," I admitted. "On the other hand, maybe I just give John Marcone a call and tell him how you're helping some of his street-level guys run some deals behind his back." Invoking the name of Marcone to a Chicago criminal is as significant as invoking the name of a saint to a devout Catholic. He's the biggest fish in the pond, the head of organized crime in Chicago, and damn good at it. His people fear him, and even cops take him very, very seriously. One day he'd slip up, and CPD, the FBI, or maybe the IRS would nail him. Until then, he was the deadliest predator in the jungle. Ray shuddered. "Look up, Ray," I said quietly. He did, and he saw what I had seen a moment before. Doors were open all up and down the hallway. People stood in them, men and women, children, parents, the elderly. They all stood there silently and watched a little blonde woman handling big, mean Ray as if he were an unruly child. Their eyes were very hard, and there wasn't any fear in them now. "Look at them, Ray," I said. He did. He shuddered again. Then his body stopped straining, and he sagged down.
"I'll go," he said.
"Fucking right you will." I shoved on his arm, and he screamed with pain, but I hadn't dislocated it. I only did it to give myself a moment to pick up my badge and step out of grab range, just in case he was too dumb to quit. He wasn't. He simply lay there like a beached shark. "I'll be checking back here, Ray, regularly. If I think you've harmed any of these people, stolen or broken their property, hell, if I hear that you gave them a dirty look, I'm going to find you and shove a bundle of rusty rebar up your ass, I promise." I took out one of my business cards, now obsolete, I supposed, and wrote down a phone number. I took the card to Maria and held it out for her. If you have any trouble, you call this number on the back. You ask for Lieutenant Stallings. Tell him Murphy gave you the number. Maria bit her lip, then she looked at Ray and back to me. She took the card with a hurried, nervous little motion and scampered back, closing her apartment door. Several locks clicked shut. I didn't say anything else. I walked out of the building. I was halfway across the lot, heading back to Will's place, when I heard quick footsteps coming behind me. I turned with one hand close to my cig, but relaxed when I recognized Maria. She stopped in front of me and said,
I saw something.
I nodded and waited.
There were some odd sounds late last night, like thumps. And a little while later, a car rolled in. It pulled up to the building across the lot, and a man got out and left it running, like he wasn't worried about it being stolen.
Did you recognize him? I asked.
Maria shook her head. But he was big, almost as big as Ray, but he moved better. He was in shape, and he was wearing an expensive suit.
What else can you tell me about him? I asked.
Maria shrugged. Not anything, really. I saw him come out again right away. Then he got into the car and drove away. I didn't see any plates or anything. I'm sorry.
Nothing to be sorry about, I said quietly. Thank you.
She nodded and turned to scurry back toward her building. Then she stopped and looked back at me. I don't know if it matters, she said, but the man had one of those army haircuts.
I stiffened a little.
Do you remember what hair color?
Red, she said.
Like bright orange red, she swallowed. If it matters.
It mattered. But I didn't want to scare her, so I nodded and smiled, then said,
Thank you, Maria. Seriously.
She tried to smile back and did pretty well. Then she looked around her as if uncomfortable standing in so much open space and hurried back to her building. A big guy in a suit with a bright red crew cut. It was almost word for word the short description in the notes of the file that CPD kept for a man named Hendricks. Hendricks was a former college football player. He weighed upward of 300 pounds, none of it excess. He had been under suspicion for several mysterious disappearances, mostly of criminal figures who seemed to have earned his boss's displeasure. And his boss had, presumably, sent him to Will and George's building late last night. But why? To get an answer, I was going to have to talk to Hendricks's boss. I had to go see gentleman John Marcone. The police know where Marcone can be reached. Finding him doesn't do diddly to let us nail him. The fact that he has his fingers in so many pies means that not only do we have to work against Marcone and his shadowy empire, but we have our own superiors and politicians breathing down our necks as well. Oh, they never say anything directly, like, stop arresting Marcone's most profitable pimps. Instead, we get a long speech about racial and socioeconomic profiling. We get screams from political action committees. We get vicious editorial pieces in the newspapers and on TV. We mostly stay quiet and keep plugging away at our jobs. Experience has taught us that hardly anyone ever cares what we think or have to say. They demand answers, but they don't want to listen. I'm not saying that cops are a bunch of white knights. I'm just saying that the politicians can spin things all sorts of ways if it means that they're guaranteed stacks of cash for their campaign chests, or that Marcone's blackmailers won't expose some dark secret from their pasts. I still had some friends in CPD. I called one who worked in the organized crime division and asked him where I could find Marcone.
Oh, Murph, Malone said. He sounded weary. This ain't the time.
Since when have you been big on punctuality? I asked. I need this. It's about Dresden.
Malone grunted. Dresden had saved his uncle from some kind of possession or, and I still have trouble with the concept when I say it, an evil enchantment. The elder Malone had been suffering to a degree I had never seen elsewhere. Cops and medics and so on couldn't do a thing for the man. Dresden had walked in, shooed everyone else out of the room, and 5 minutes later Malone was sane again, if worse for wear. It had made an impression on Malone's nephew.
Okay, he said. Give me a couple minutes. They've got everyone with a star running around the city looking for Bin Laden or Bigfoot or whoever else might have blown up that building. I ain't slept for 2 days, and the FBI is coming down like a freaking cloud of angry mama birds after what happened at their office. He cleared his throat. I heard you might have been around there. I grunted, neutrally. Weird stuff, huh? I sighed. Internal Affairs or the FBI might still have my phone tapped, and I was reluctant to say much. On the other hand, what were they going to do, take my career away? Serious weirdness. The same flavor as the kind that hit the old Velvet Room. That was where Dresden had fought a whole bunch of vampires and wound up burning down the entire house. Malone whistled. Was it as bad as that guy down in the SI holding tank? The kid meant the Lugaroo. We were stupid enough to lock Harley McFinn in a normal cell. He transformed into this hideous Ice Age-looking thing. It was half the size of an old Buick, and it could only loosely be called a wolf. Brave men had died that night, fighting with weapons that were utterly useless against a Lugaroo. Carmichael, my old partner, had died there, all but throwing himself into the thing's jaws to buy me a few seconds. I feel nauseated when I think about it. I don't know, really. Things happened too fast. I rounded up some people, went down a stairway and out. SWAT went in, but by the time they did, there was nothing left but staff hiding in closets and under desks and a lot of bodies. Jesus, he said. Malone, I need this, I pressed firmly. Call you back in a minute, he said. I put my phone back into my coat pocket and looked at Will. We were both standing on the sidewalk in front of his apartment. This is crazy, Will said quietly. Vampires hitting a government building? Blowing up buildings in a major city? They don't do that. If they followed all the rules, they wouldn't be bad guys, I said. It's just... He swallowed. I really wish Harry was around. He'd have a take on it. That makes two of us. Will shook his head. I've been too crazy to even ask. Where is he? I glanced at him and away, keeping my face still. The color drained out of Will's cheeks. No. He's not... It doesn't work like that. We don't know where he is, I said. He was staying out on that ratty boat he uses until he could find somewhere else to sleep. We found blood. Bullet holes. Blood trail leading into the lake. Will shook his head. But if he was hurt, he wouldn't go to a hospital. He'd call Waldo Butters. He took his cell phone from his pocket. He's in my contacts. We can call... I know about Butters, Will, I interrupted gently. I called him first thing after I saw the blood. He hasn't heard from Harry. Oh my God, Will said, his voice a whisper. I felt like I just double-tapped Santa Claus. Maybe he isn't dead, I said. Maybe it was somebody else with the same blood type who got shot. Or maybe Dresden pulled one of his tricks and just vanished, whoosh, off to a wizard hospital somewhere. Yeah, Will said, nodding. Yeah, maybe. I mean, he can do all kinds of things, right? All kinds of things, I said. Including dying. But I didn't say that. Detective Malone was good to his word, and 5 minutes later we were heading for a building on the north edge of Bucktown. Another renovation project Gentleman Johnny's most legitimate business interests had secured. He had purchased, refurbished, updated, and preserved more than a dozen buildings in the city over the past several years. He'd been feted and decorated and honored at various society functions as a man who was preserving the native beauty of Chicago architecture, saving it from being destroyed and forgotten, etc. If you didn't consider the drugs, gambling, prostitution, extortion, and other shadow franchises he ruled, I guess he was a real citizen hero. Contractors were hard at work on the building as we came in, and the security guard in a white shirt and black pants walked over to us with a frown as I entered the building. Will was at my back. I hoped that if things went nutty, I wouldn't have to drag him with me when I shot my way out. I felt myself smile at that image, mostly because of its fantasy content. If blood was spilled in Marcone's headquarters, I wouldn't live long enough to drag anybody out. No trespassers, the guard said firmly. This is a construction site. Dangerous. You'll have to leave. I eyed the man and said, I'm here to see John Mark Hone. The guard eyed me. Then he got on his little radio and spoke into it. A moment later, a voice squawked an answer. Mr. Marcone is not available. Yes, he is, I said. Go tell him Karen Murphy is here to see him. I'm afraid not, he said. You'll have to leave. He had a gun, a 9mm Glock, I noted. I took out the little leather wallet with my police ID in it and said, If you make me open this, it gets official. There will be official questions, official paperwork, and lots of men in uniform trespassing all over your site. I held the wallet out as if presenting a crucifix to a vampire, fingers poised as if to open it. Do you want to be the one who gives your boss that kind of headache? His eyes moved from me to Will. He looked quickly away. Then he took a few steps back toward the interior of the building and had a low, rather emphatic conversation with his radio. I folded my arms and tapped one foot impatiently.
Would you really do that?
Will asked me.
Can't, I said. I'm getting fired, but they don't know that.
Will made a choking sound. The guard came back and said, Through that door, two floors down, then take your first left and you'll see it. He coughed. You'll have to leave any weapons with me. I snorted and said, Like hell. Then I brushed past him, nudging him slightly aside with my shoulder as though spoiling for a fight. Martian for, It is inappropriate for you to screw with me in any way. He got the message. He didn't try to stop us. Will's quiet chuckle followed me down the stairs. Marcone's office was located in what appeared to be a dining hall. The room was huge and tiled, and several contractors, most of them brawnier and more heavily tattooed than the average laborer, sat at long tables eating. Caterers kept several serving tables of food stocked with the same attention and care that I would have expected in a high society gala. It was brightly lit, and a raised stage at one end of the room, which would presumably host a full orchestral band if one were present, had instead been loaded with computers and office furniture. The portrait of a busy executive, Marcone, sat at an enormous old desk, holding a phone to his ear with one shoulder, his business shirt rolled up to his elbows. Everything about him screamed, successful patriarch. His suit jacket, hung over the back of his chair, was worth more than some small nations. His loosened tie, a simple silver number, rather than a bright power tie, bespoke confidence and strength that needed no such sartorial declaration. His hands were broad and looked strong. There were scars on his knuckles. His short, conservatively cut hair was dark, except for just enough silver at his temples to announce a man in his physical and mental prime. He was well-built and obviously kept himself in shape, and his features were regular and appealing. He was by no means beautiful, but his face projected strength and competence. He looked like a man others would willingly follow. Two other people stood on the stage, slightly behind him, testimony to his ability to lead. The first was a woman, a blonde Amazon, more than 6 feet tall in a gray business suit. She had the legs that had been cruelly denied me at birth, the bitch. Her name was Guard, and Dresden had believed she was an actual, literal Valkyrie. The other was Hendrix. He wasn't truly ugly, but he reminded me of a gargoyle anyway. A slab-muscled being with a misshapen appearance and beady eyes, ready to leap into action on behalf of the man he watched over. His eyes tracked me as I approached. Guard's blue eyes focused on me for a moment, then skipped past me to Will. She narrowed her eyes and murmured something toward Marcone. Chicago's resident lord of the underworld gave no indication that he'd heard her, and I caught the last few lines of a conversation as I approached.
You'll just have to do it yourself.
He paused, listening, then he said,
I don't have the proper resources for such a thing. And even if I did, I wouldn't waste them by sending them there blind and unprepared. You'll have to use your own people.
He paused again and then said,
Neither of us will ever be scratching each other's back, mutually or otherwise. I will not send my people into danger without more information. Should you change your mind, you may feel free to contact me. Good day.
He hung up the phone and then turned toward me. He had eyes the color of several days' old grass clippings.
They were opaque, reptilian. He made a steeple of his fingertips and said, "Ms. Murphy."
"News travels fast," I said.
"To me, yes."
His mouth turned up in a heartless smile.
"Which are you here for, work or revenge?"
"Why would I want revenge on such a pillar of the community?"
"Dresden,"
he said simply.
"I assume you're here because you think me responsible."
"What if I am?" I asked.
"Then I would advise you to leave. You wouldn't live long enough to take your gun from your coat."
"And besides," I said, "you didn't do it, right? And you have a perfectly rational reason to explain why you didn't even want him dead." He shrugged, a motion he managed to infuse with elegance.
"No more than any other day, at any rate," he said. "I had no need to assassinate Dresden. He'd been working diligently to get himself killed for several years, as I pointed out to him a few days ago."
I kept my heart on lockdown. The cocky bastard's tone made me want to scream and tear out his eyes. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction of knowing he'd rattled me. "I'm here for another reason."
"Oh?"
he asked politely. Too politely. He knew. He'd known why I was coming since before I came through the door. I stopped and played the past several hours back in my imagination before I spotted where I'd contacted his net. "Maria," I said. "She was one of yours." Hendricks eyed guard. She rolled her eyes and withdrew a $20 bill from her jacket pocket. She passed it to the big man. Hendricks pocketed it with a small, complacent smile. Marcone took no evident note of the interaction.
"Yes, the superintendent you met had been providing the means for some of my competitors to operate. Maria was observing his business partners so that we could track them back to their source and encourage them to operate elsewhere."
I stared at him hard. "She just let Ray treat her like that?"
"And was well paid to do it,"
Marcone replied.
"Admittedly, she was looking forward to closing the contract."
Maria hadn't been a broken little mouse. Hell, she was one of Marcone's troubleshooters. It was a widely used euphemism for hitters in Marcone's outfit. Everyone knew it was the troubleshooter's job to identify trouble within the organization and shoot it. "And you're just standing there, sharing all this with me?" I asked. His expression turned bland.
"It isn't as though I'm confessing to a police officer, is it, Ms. Murphy?"
I clenched my teeth. I swear, scratch out his goddamn eyes. That was why Maria came running out after me. She took enough time to call in, report, and ask you for instructions. Marcone nodded his head very slightly. "And she was also why Hendricks showed up," I continued. "Maria saw or heard something and reported in." Marcone spread his hands.
"You apprehend the situation."
I clenched a fist again to let out some of the anger his deliberate choice of words had inspired.
"Why?"
Will demanded suddenly, stepping forward to stand beside me. I noted that both Will and I were under average height. We stood staring up at Marcone on the raised stage. It was hard not to feel like an extra in the cast of Oliver. "Please, sir, may I have some more?"
"Why?" he repeated. "Why did you send your man to my apartment?"
Marcone tilted his head slightly to regard Will.
"What are you willing to pay for such information, young man?"
Will's upper lip lifted away from his teeth.
"How about I don't tear you and your goons into hamburger?"
Marcone regarded Will for maybe 3 seconds, his face blank. Then he made a single, swift motion. I barely saw the gleam of metal as the small knife flickered across the space between them and buried itself 2 inches deep in Will's right bicep. Will let out a cry and staggered. My own hands went toward my coat, but guard had lifted a shotgun from behind a cabinet and leveled it on me as my fingers touched the handle of my SIG. Hendricks had produced a heavy-caliber pistol from his suit, though he hadn't aimed at anyone. I stopped, then moved my fingers slowly from my gun. Will ripped the knife out of his arm, then turned to Marcone, his teeth bared.
"Don't confuse yourself with Dresden, Mr. Borden,"
Marcone said, his voice level and cold. His eyes were something frightening, pitiless.
"You don't have the power to threaten me.
The instant you begin to change, Miss Guard here will fire on Miss Murphy, and then upon you.
His voice dropped to a barely audible murmur.
The next time you offer me a threat, I will kill you.
Will's breaths came in pained gasps, each exhalation tinged with a growl. But he didn't answer. The room had become completely quiet. The men who were eating lunch had stopped moving, as if frozen in place. No one looked directly at the confrontation, but all of them were watching from the corners of their eyes. A lot of hands were out of sight.
"He means it, Will," I said quietly. "This won't help her."
Marcone left it like that for a moment, staring at Will before he settled back into his chair again, his eyes becoming hooded and calm once more.
"Have you given thought to your next career move, Miss Murphy? I'm always looking for competent help. When I find it, I pay a premium for it."
I wondered where he'd heard about my suspension, but I supposed it wasn't important. He had more access to the CPD than most cops. I asked him calmly, "Does the job involve beating you unconscious and throwing you into a cell forever?"
"No," Marcone said, "although it offers an excellent dental plan. And combined with your pension check, it would make you a moderately wealthy woman."
"Not interested," I said. "I will never work for you."
"Never is a very long time, Miss Murphy."
Marcone blinked slowly and then sighed.
"Clearly the atmosphere has become unproductive," he said. "Miss Guard, please escort them both from the premises. Give them the information they want."
"Yes, sir," Guard said. She lowered the shotgun slowly. Then she returned it to its place behind the desk, picked up a file folder from it, and walked out to Will and me. I stooped and picked up the dropped, blood-stained knife before she could reach it. Then I wiped it clean on a pocket handkerchief, taking the blood from it, before offering the handle to Ms. Guard. I was more or less ignorant about magic, but I knew that Guard knew more about it than I, and that blood could be used in spells or incantations or whatever, to the great detriment of the bleeder. By wiping the blood from the blade, I'd prevented them from having an easy way to get to Will. Guard smiled at me very slightly and nodded her head in what looked like approval. She took the knife, slipped it into a pocket, and then said, "This way, please." We followed her back out of the room. Will walked with his left hand pressed to his right biceps, his expression furious. There was blood, but not much of it. His shirt was soaking it up, and he'd clamped his hand hard over the wound. The knife hadn't hit any major blood vessels, or he'd have been on the floor by now. We'd clean it up once we were out of here. "You may know," Ms. Guard said as we walked, "that Mr. Marcone's business interests are varied. Some of them have fierce competitors."
"Drugs," I said, "extortion, prostitution, those are the money makers. There's always competition for territory."
Guard continued as if she hadn't heard me. "Competition has increased rather dramatically of late, and it has consisted of increasingly competent personnel. We've also had a number of issues with involuntary employee dereliction." Will let out a snort.
"Does she mean what I think she means?"
"Hitters," I said quietly. "Marcone's been losing people." I frowned. "But there hasn't been any particular increase in the number of homicides." "They haven't been killed," Guard said, frowning. "They've vanished, quickly, quietly, sometimes with minimal signs of a struggle." Will inhaled sharply.
"Georgia."
Guard passed me the folder. I opened it and found a simple printout of a web browser document. "Craigslist," I read, for Will's benefit. "Talent search, Chicago. Standard compensation for new talent. Contact for delivery dates. And there's an email address." "I know some of the business Dresden was involved in yesterday," she said quietly. "In the past 24 hours, announcements like this have appeared in London, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Paris, Rome, Berlin." "I get the point," I said. "Something big is happening."
"Exactly," Guard said.
She glanced at Will and said, "Someone is rounding up these mortals possessed of modest supernatural gifts."
"Talent search," I said.
"Yes," Guard said. "I don't know who or what is behind it. We haven't been able to get close. Whoever they are, they're quite well informed, and they know our personnel."
"Why was Hendricks at my apartment?" Will asked.
Maria saw someone force your wife and another young woman out of the building and into a car. We know about your gifts, obviously. Marcone sent Hendricks to case the scene to look for any evidence of our opponent's identity. He found nothing. She shook her head. From here on, I have only conjecture, Guard said. I'll give it to you if you want it. You don't need to, I told her. Someone started picking on the little guys in town within a few hours of Dresden's shooting. He never would have stood for something like that. So, whoever is responsible for these disappearances might well be behind the shooting, too. Excellent, Guard said, nodding in approval. We don't really specialize in finding people, she glanced down at me. But you do. I'm not doing this for Marcone, I snarled. We reached the building's entrance, and Ms. Guard looked at me thoughtfully. A word of advice. Be cautious what official channels you use for assistance. We aren't the only ones who have compromised the local authorities. Yes, I said. I know how it works. Guard frowned at me and then nodded her head a little more deeply than was usual. Of course. My apologies. I frowned at her, trying to figure out what she meant. There wasn't any trace of sarcasm or irony in her words or her body language. Damn, I wasn't used to confronting non-Martians. Nothing to apologize for, I said after a hesitation. I didn't sleep well last night. She studied me for a moment. I can't tell if what I'm seeing in you is courage or despair. I'd ask, but I'm almost sure you wouldn't know the answer. Excuse me? Guard nodded. Exactly. She sighed. I'm sorry about Dresden. He was a brave man. I suddenly felt furious that she had spoken of Harry in the past tense. It wasn't anything I hadn't done in my thoughts, but I hadn't spoken the words aloud either. They haven't found the body, I told her, and I heard a fierceness in my voice I had not intended. Don't write him off just yet. The Valkyrie gave me a smile that bared her canine teeth. Good hunting. She bade us, and then went back inside the building. I turned to Will and said, Let's take care of your arm. It's fine, Will said. Don't play tough guy with me, I said. Let me see. Will sighed, then he took his hand away from the wound. There was a slit in his shirt sleeve where the knife had gone in. It was too high up on his arm to make rolling the sleeve up practical, so I tore it a little wider and examined the wound. It wasn't bleeding. There was an angry, swollen purple line over the puncture mark. It wasn't a scab, either. It was just healing, albeit into a damn ugly scar. I whistled softly. How? We've been experimenting, Will said quietly. Closing an injury isn't really much different than shifting back into human form. My arm still hurts like hell, but I can stop bleeding, probably, if it isn't too bad. We're not sure about the limits. Leaves a hell of a mark, though. His stomach gurgled. And the energy for it has to come from somewhere. I'm starving. Neat trick. I thought so. Will kept pace beside me as we headed back to the car. What do we do next? Food, I said. Then we contact the bad guys. He frowned. Won't that just, you know, warn them that we're onto them? No, I said. They'll want to meet me. Why? I looked up at him. Because I'm going to be selling them some new talent. We went to my place. There wasn't much point in setting the dogs on the owner of the email address. It would prove to be anonymous, and given what I had for hard evidence, even if I could get someone to pay attention to me, by the time it went through channels and peeled away all the red tape and got a judge somewhere to move, I was sure the address would be old news, and anyone connected to it would long since have departed. I might have gotten some help from a friend at the Bureau, except that in the wake of the Red Court attack on their headquarters building, they would be going crazy looking for the terrorists responsible. They, too, were long since departed. Dresden had seen to that. The TV news was all about the bombing, the attack, while everyone speculated about who had done what, and used the occasion to put forward their own social and political agendas. People suck, but they're the only ones around who can keep the lights on. I turned Will loose on my fridge and then sent him out to make a few discreet inquiries of the local supernatural scene. I heard his car door close when he returned, about the time the daylight was turning golden orange. It looked like it would be another cold night.
There was the sound of a second car door closing. Will knocked at the front door, and I answered it with my gun held low and against my leg. There proved to be a girl with him. She was a little taller than I, which still put her below average, and I had pencils bigger around than she was. Her glasses were oversized, her hair thin, straight, and the same brown of a house mouse's fur. Still, there was something in the way she held herself that put up the hairs on the back of my neck. The young woman might be a lightweight, but so were rats. And you didn't want to trap one of them in a corner if you could avoid it. She contained a measure of danger that demanded respect. Her eyes flickered to my face and then down to my gun hand in the same first half second of recognition. She stopped slightly behind Will, her body language wary. "Murphy?" Will said, nodding, but he didn't try to come in or make any other movement that might force me to react. Maybe you remember Marcy? We were all at Marcone's place, stuck down in that muddy pit, drugged. Good times? The young woman asked hopefully. My partner died the day before when the Lou Garou gutted him. Not so much, I said. I looked at Will. You trust her?
Sure,
Will said without a second's hesitation.
Maybe I'm getting cynical as I age. I stared at Marcy hard for a second before I said,
I don't. No one said anything for a minute. Then Will said, I'm vouching for her.
You're emotionally involved, Will, I said. It's compromising your judgment. Marcone could have put a bullet through your head instead of tossing that little knife at you. If Dresden was standing here telling you to be suspicious, what would you do?
Will's expression darkened, but I saw him get a hold of himself and take a deep breath.
I don't know, he said finally. I don't know. I've known Marcy for years.
You knew her years ago, I corrected him with gentle emphasis. Marcy rubbed one foot against the other calf and stood looking down, her eyes on her feet. It looked like a habitual stance, social camouflage.
She's right, Will, she said in a quiet voice.
Will frowned at her. How?
She should be suspicious of me, given the circumstances. I've been back in town for what, 2 weeks? And something like this happens? I'd be worried, too.
She looked up at me, her expression uncertain.
I want to help, Sergeant Murphy, she said. What do we do?
I stared at them both, thinking. Damn it, this was another one of those Dresden things. He could have pinched his nose for a second, then swept his gaze over them and reported whether or not they were who they said they were. Supernatural creatures are big on shape-shifting. They use it to get in close to their prey. In an attack like that, a mortal has the next best thing to zero probability of escaping.
I knew. It had been done to me. The sense of chagrin and helplessness is terrible.
To start with, I said, let me see if you can come in.
Marcy frowned at me.
What do you mean?
I mean that if you're a shapeshifter or something, you might not have an easy time coming over the threshold.
Christ, Sergeant, Will began. Of course she's a shapeshifter, so am I.
I glowered at them both.
If she's who she says she is, she won't have a problem, I said.
Will sighed and looked at Marcy.
Sorry.
No, it's fine, the young woman said. It's smart to be careful.
Marcy held her hands out to her sides in plain sight and stepped into the house.
Good enough?
Houses are surrounded by a barrier of energy. Dresden always called it the threshold. It's all murky magic stuff to me, but the general guideline is that anything that's too hideously supernatural can't come in without being invited. A threshold will stop spirits, ghosts, some vampires, but not others, and will generally ward away things that intend to eat your face. Not everything, not hardly, but a lot of things.
No, I said and put my gun away, but it's a start. I nodded to a chair in the living room.
Sit down.
She did, and she sat down looking at her hands, which were folded in her lap.
Will followed Marcy in and gave me a look that meant in Martian, "What the hell do you think you're doing?"
I ignored him. "Marcy," I said, "why didn't you respond to Will when he tried to contact you earlier?"
"I tried," she said. "I called back as soon as I got the message, but I didn't have Will's cell number, only George's."
"Why not?" I asked.
She said,
I just got back into town, and Georgia doesn't need any stress, and is married. I mean, you don't just go asking for a husband's phone number, you know? Which was reasonable, put that way. I nodded, neither approving nor disapproving. I left messages on the answering machine at the apartment, Marcy said. It was all I could do.
And I checked the messages after I'd run your errands, Will said. I called her back and had her come over. She swept for scents, and then we came here.
Will, I said firmly, please let me handle this. He clenched his jaw and subsided, leaning against a wall. I turned back to where Marcy sat and continued towering over her, a posture of parental-style authority. Tell me about your relationship to Georgia.
We're friends, Marcy said. Close friends, really. I think of her as a close friend, I mean. She was very kind to me when Andy broke it off with me, and we were friends for years before that.
I nodded. Did Will explain what was going on?
She nodded.
Georgia and Andy had been taken.
How do you know it was Andy with Georgia?
Because I was there, Marcy said. I mean, not last night, but the night before last. Will was out of town, and we had a girls' night.
Girls' night?
We hung out and made fondue and watched movies and lied about how we all look better now than when we first met. Well, except that Andy actually does.
She shook her head.
Anyway, we stayed up late talking, and Andy slept in the guest bed, and I slept on the couch. She glanced up at my eyes for the first time. That was when we had the nightmares.
Nightmares?
She shuddered. I don't want to think about it, but all three of us had an almost identical nightmare. It was the worst for Georgia. She looked at Will. It was as if she hadn't quite woken up out of the dream. She kept jerking and twitching. She gave me a weak smile. Took two cups of cocoa to snap her out of it.
I kept my face neutral and gave her nothing.
Go on. Me and Andy talked about it and decided that one of us should stay with her. We were going to trade off, like, until Will came home.
The first night was Andy, I take it.
Marcy nodded, biting her lip.
Yes. Sounds reasonable, I said. Reasonable, logical, and impossible to verify.
And the kid was shaking. Jesus Christ, Karen, said a gentler voice inside me. What are you doing? She's scared to death.
I tried to make my tone a little warmer.
What do you know about their abduction, specifically, Marcy? Can you tell me anything at all that might point toward the identity of the kidnappers?
She shook her head. I can't think of anything that I picked up beforehand, but I'm certain that it was Andy and Georgia who were taken.
How can you be sure? I asked.
Will cleared his throat and spoke quietly. Marcy's got a nose. She's better with sense than any of the rest of us.
I eyed Marcy. Could you pick up their trail?
They were taken downstairs and loaded into the back of a car, Marcy said promptly. An older model, burning too much oil. But I couldn't follow them after that. I think I'll be able to recognize the scent of their captors, though, if I run into it.
I nodded. She'd gotten a ton more out of the scene than Will had. Such a talent could be damn useful. All the same, I wasn't sure. She sounded sincere to me, and I'm pretty good at knowing when someone isn't. But there's always a better liar out there. I just wasn't sure.
But you have to trust someone, sometime, even when it seems risky, when lives are on the line. Maybe even especially then.
Okay, I said calmly and took a seat in another chair.
Will, I asked, what did you find out?
There are half a dozen other folks who have gone missing in the past day and a half, Will said. At least that's how many Bach and McAnally know about. Word about the kidnappings is out on the Paranet and has been spreading since yesterday morning. People are moving places in groups of three and four at least. McAnally's is packed. The community knows something is up. They're scared.
Marcy nodded. It isn't just Chicago. It's happening all over the country. Group leaders are keeping everyone informed, asking after their people, reporting them missing to the local cops, for whatever good that might do.
Her voice trailed off into a little squeak as she looked at me.
I'm sorry.
I ignored her, Martian for this is easier for all of us if we just pretend I didn't hear it.
Will, Did you turn up anything we can use? He shook his head.
No one has seen or heard anything at any of the disappearances, but there are rumors that someone found a gang of Red Court vampires torn apart in a basement across town. Maybe that has something to do with what's going on.
It doesn't, I said firmly. Not directly, at least. Dresden killed the Red Court.
Will blinked. You mean those vampires in the basement?
I mean the Red Court, I said. All of them.
Will let out a quiet whistle. Wow, that's pretty big magic, I guess.
Yeah, I said. Marcy's face was twisted up in a frown of concentration.
Was this the night before last, by any chance?
I glanced aside at her and nodded once.
If there was a really big surge of magic, maybe that explains the dreams, she said.
It wasn't just the three of us. The night before last, a lot of people, Paranet people, I mean, had nightmares, too. Some of them were bad enough that people hadn't slept since. A couple of folks wound up in the hospital. She blinked at Will.
That's what happened with you, Will.
What do you mean?
Will said.
When Georgia called you, she'd had the nightmare twice during the day when she tried to sleep. She must have had it again and tried to call you.
There's no point in speculation for now, I looked at Will. In short, more people missing, bad dreams, everyone is gathering in defense of herds. That's about it.
More or less, Will said. What did you get?
I sent an email to the address Marcone gave us. Told them I had a talent in need of placement. I got a public phone location. I'm supposed to be there to answer a call at 9 tonight.
Will frowned. So they can get a look at you first, right?
Probably.
You shouldn't look like you,
Marcy blurted, her face colored slightly.
I mean, like you're the supernatural cop in Chicago. Everyone knows that. And it makes sense that anyone planning something here wouldn't have much trouble finding out who might actually get in their way.
Unfortunately, I said, I don't have a different look.
Will looked at Marcy, frowning, and then said, makeover.
We have a little time, Marcy said, nodding.
Hey, I said.
She's right, Miss Murphy, Will said.
You've been seen with Dresden, a lot, and no offense, but not many people look like you do.
Meaning? I asked him. I smiled.
Will's eyes might have checked the distance between himself and the door.
Meaning you're outside the norm for adult height and weight, he said.
Exceptionally so. We should do what we can to make it harder to identify you.
Will had a point, I supposed. Annoying as it might be, his logic was sound. And I was almost certainly a little sensitive where my height was concerned. I sighed. All right, but if I hear montage music starting to play, I'm cutting it short.
Will, seeming to relax, nodded.
Cool.
Marcy nodded with him.
So what about Will and me? I mean, what do the two of us do?
I looked at the pair of young werewolves and pursed my lips.
How do you feel about duct tape? When I answered the payphone outside a small grocery store on Belmont, I felt like an idiot. In the windows of a darkened shop across the street, I could see my reflection. Halloween had come early this year. I wore boots not unlike Herman Munster's, with elevator soles about 3 inches thick, making me look taller. My hair was dyed matte black and was slicked down to my skull. There was so much product in it, I was fairly sure it would deflect bullets. I wore some black dance tights Marcy had donated to the cause, a black T-shirt, and a black leather jacket in a youth size. My face was the worst part of the disguise. I was all but smothered beneath the makeup. Dark tones of silver that faded to black made a mess of my eyes, altering their shape by means of suggestion through clever application of liner. In the evening light, I might have looked Asian. My lips were darkened, too, a shade of wine red that somehow managed to complement the eyeshadow. The lipstick changed the shape of my mouth slightly and made my lips look fuller. I glowered at the reflection. This costume had exactly one thing going for it. I didn't look a thing like me. The phone rang and I picked it up, jerking it off the base unit as if impatient. I glared around me, my eyes tracking across every spot I thought could contain an observer, and said, "Yeah?"
"The merchandise,"
murmured a soft, sibilant voice with an odd accent.
Describe.
There was something intrinsically unsettling about the voice. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up. One male and one female, mid to late 20s, shapeshifters. There was a rustle of static over the line.